Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today is a very interesting dude, in my opinion. Nick Britton is his name. He's got a book that's coming out that we're going to talk about. But first, let me say hello, Nick. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Thanks again for joining us. We were just chatting right before we hit record, but you've had a litany of life experiences thus far in your life before becoming a parent. You were went to military school. You played college football. You were an Eagle Scout, or are an Eagle Scout. I don't think you ever stopped being an Eagle Scout. And then the natural progression after all of those things is you become a preschool teacher.
Yes, crazy. Absolutely.
So how does that jump happen out of curiosity?
We all have a big picture purpose of what we do. You know, I think you like to make people laugh.
Correct.
That's your purpose. My purpose is to help as many people as possible. And that constantly changes how I help people.
Being in preschool, or you're just saying just in life in general?
But life in general, big picture-wise, life in general. First, it was, you know, I want to, serve in the military because that's helping our country.
Yeah.
And then it became, okay, that's no politics aside. You know, I want to be a teacher and help future generations.
Yep.
And then it just constantly grows as I grow as a person. My goals grow. My dreams goals. My dreams grow, and everything else changes. So it's like a never ending revolving door over, you know, what I'm doing next.
How much of your military experience were you able to apply to preschool? Because as I said right before we hit record, as I imagine, there wasn't a lot of, listen to me, you little puss balls, your last easy day was yesterday.
And
I just want you to be wearing, what's his name? Arlie Ermey. I want this guy.
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
I want Arlie Ermey in a preschool situation, and I would probably pay triple what I paid for my kids to have them just get in there. You know, I owed you. Boom Boom's going to potty starting yesterday. Like that kind of a vibe, but there was none of that.
There was a little.
Yes, a little.
Interesting thing. It all goes back to is I learned most from my children. You could take all of my experiences as. You know, in college, I have a master's degrees, I have a couple of bachelor's degrees, the military training, take all of that. And the amount I learned from the kids is just the most mind-blowing thing. You know, you go into a situation like, okay, this is my classroom. You know, these are my kids. It's going to be my rules. And then, you know, like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you're with children, whether you're a father, whether you're a mother, whatever realm you are, as soon as that kid screams, it becomes real so fast.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second, because I'm guilty, and maybe you could set me straight in that. I'm probably very guilty. I'm more authoritarian. I think a long time ago, a listener sent in like one of those fun Facebook things where, you know, you see those surveys where you can find out which girl from Sex and the City you were, or which Avenger you are. And this one was which kind of parent you are. And I was a military general or something was basically who I was. And I do. I'm not saying that, and I think this goes without saying, but there is, my house is not a house of without love. There is tons of love, but I am a guy who likes order. I like rules, and I wish, and for anybody who's thinking that my life is easier because of that, or they want to use this to pick a fight with their spouse to say, see, it works for him. Let me tell you something. I am a guy who yells at my kids. I've cursed at my children, and, it does not frighten them. The only thing I was afraid of my father from in a respectful way. And I think maybe because he struck me, I don't hit my kids, but it's not like it makes it any easier. I think we all end up having the same battles. And the reason I bring all this up is because for you to say to me that there is something that I could learn from my children does not seem outside of the realm of possibility, but it is definitely not my way of thinking. To me, I'm like, really? That sounds a little, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. What am I missing that you see?
Little things. You're a very well-respected person in your field. I've done some consulting with people who struggle with motivation. People, specifically parents, stay-at-home dads who are looking for that sense of purpose. They get lost in what their big goals and dreams are. We see that I'm very popular in the stay-at-home dad Facebook communities, mm-hmm. in those pages. And it, just changing your mindset. For instance, the entrepreneur, right? As a comedian, you essentially decided to work for yourself. Am I right with that judgment?
Absolutely, yeah.
So
I'm about to do it again. This joking I've been doing for years about a full-time job. I'm about 2 weeks away from no longer having a full-time job because the corporate world, I think, is just not for this guy.
Yes. And think about, for instance, a child walking, right? No matter what age your kid is, you will experience, or you have experienced, your child trying to first crawl and then trying to stand up and falling down dozens and dozens of times. And maybe the mother is freaking out because it looks like they're going to hit themselves on the table. But essentially, that constant pursuit of what the child wants to do, i.e. stand up and walk, you can relate that and correlate that to your life, to your comedian, to your comedy profession, to an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's good. So really what you're saying is it's not like if I stopped telling my kids what to do and sat down with them, and I'm sure there is an aspect to this that you do believe that, because in my mind I'm sitting like, well, I've had lunch with my children and I've talked to them about things, and there has never been a time that I can off the top, although I'm going to eat my words, because I did just share a story from a moment of the week recently where my son kind of helped me decide why it didn't make sense for us to either buy a house that had a pool or put a pool in our backyard. And he actually put it in a way that I did not think of. So I'm going to be a complete hypocrite, but I'll keep walking down the path for the sake of conversation. Mm-hmm. Is that up until that moment, I've not had a lunch or a conversation with my child where I was like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought of things that way. But it seems like what you're saying is that in the stay-at-home dad or even mom or even parental lifestyle, it is very easy. We talk a lot about this with Rachel Gibbs. It's very easy to fall into a rut, and that your rut, when you fall into that rut, it's because you need to move your mindset and readjust it. So and look for inspiration from your children's determination to figure something out, or just how they slowly chip away and develop at things. And you could take those little small examples and apply them to your own life. Is that a fair way to assess it?
Yes, of course. And I also talk about an interesting thing. And this is not as a parent. This is putting my teacher hat on. I had this young boy that he was that monster child that we've all experienced or seen. And he punched some kid in the head and he started biting him. And I intervened. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? And he couldn't give me an answer. He told me he just wanted to do it. There was something inside of him that he didn't like that person, and he wanted to do that. Although we can't run around and punch people in the face, society and other teachers would have made this kid lie and drag out a better excuse rather than, I just didn't like that person because the way he looked at me.
Yeah. And there's a lot of similarities between preschool and prison. We all can agree with that.
Yes, very, very much. And, that's something else. It's, kids, naturally, they take full responsibility for their life. They don't blame anyone. They're not blaming politicians. They're not blaming their neighbor or anyone else. They're taking responsibility for their actions. And somewhere along the lines, between, preschool and kindergarten and first and second grade, they start to develop these habits that, in my opinion, what I've seen is beginning to look like lying, beginning to make up excuses. And it's a shame, to be honest with you.
That's really interesting, because when you first tell me that a kid will take responsibility for their own actions, and I can't be alone in this, is that my first is like, wait a minute, because I've seen them constantly blame the other sibling or something like that. But I think really what you're saying is that there is a very strong chance, because we all can agree that they are little sponges, and that, even Rachel, Dave Ramsey's daughter, who I had, and I can't pull her last name, but I know it was Rachel. She had this line in her book, but said that more is caught than is taught, you know, meaning that they pick up more about the things that you don't necessarily mean for them to pick up than they do the things that you're actually trying to drive into their personality to either make them better than you or get that value that you care about into them. And so we could be unintentionally teaching them to, you know, displace blame or project it onto something else, as opposed to just always taking ownership for your own mistakes.
Yes, I see it all the time, and it's usually a small, you know, one small thing that sets that child over the edge, and they, as you said, a sponge. They learn those traits because of that one situation. If I intervene with that situation differently, and like I've seen teachers like, well, you know, and they put words in the child's mouth. Did you do this because Susie did that? And the child just begins to agree, and then he begins to believe that.
Are you still working in a preschool setting, or have you gone?
No.
You're self-employed now, right?
I'm fully self-employed, 100% right now. The entrepreneur mindset, the entrepreneur life. I'm very fortunate that my wife is understanding of, you know, my crazy side gigs, and I do all these things to make it work, and it always works out. And she has that steady paycheck coming in. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, that I am lucky in that area as well, as I'm sure you know. The reason I ask is I can't walk away from being a guy who's now a dad. You've got a 10-month old son or daughter?
Son.
And yeah. So you experienced all of this preschool stuff before having kids. And I want to know, what's it like being a guy at a preschool and interacting with parents?
Oh, it's brutal. Horrible. You want to talk about sexual harassment in the workplace.
Really?
Not even joking. Yes. Between parents. Single moms just making comments. I had...
About you?
Yes.
See, the listeners can't see you, but let me just say, especially for the moms, Nick is worth a Google. I'm looking at a guy. He's got a strong jawline, got broad shoulders. He's pecs. Listen, you know what I mean? He's a handsome guy. So it makes sense. It's not like he doesn't look like me. He's not schlubby guy at the preschool. So it would stand to reason. I experienced something very similar when I was working with Lazy Town. I don't know if anybody remembers that show. It was on Nick Jr. And it's from Iceland. And the guy was an aerobic champion who kind of created the show and was the star of it. And he was very athletic. And oh my gosh. The things that moms would say and do, like this guy constantly had all five digits cupped around his ass and squeezing for every photo they were taking with their 2-year-old toddler at this mall. So I get it. So back to you. I'm sorry. So sexual harassment from moms directed at you. Hit me.
Yes. It was, you know, it was an experience because my first school, we had a staff of 24 and I was the only in the first male hire.
Wow.
Yeah, so one out of 25.
And how old were you?
At that time, I was 24.
Oh, that is prime, especially, oh my gosh, 24-year-old dude who's in shape. Yeah, it's over.
Yes, straight from the whole military football thing. And it was a mind-opening experience and all the drama and craziness with working with 24 women and one guy who was just, I've never honestly felt more alone in my life. I would go to professional conferences with thousands of people, and there wouldn't even be a male bathroom. They would put plastic signs, paper signs
because
over
they
the
needed,
men's room.
Yeah, they needed the square
they would
footage.
Take them over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll be like, you know, there'd be like 12 guys out of 1,500 people, and there'd be no men's room because we would have to walk across the street to Starbucks. It was just a big time role reverse.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting though. I absolutely loved it. I learned so much from that experience, but then becoming a father, becoming a parent on your own, everything you think you know, whatever you can read, all those manuals, podcasts, whatever you do, it disappears as soon as you have that life that is your full responsibility.
Well, I'm curious. I got to go back to it because I'm just fascinated by it. Give me one or two of your favorite anecdotes of a mom really making either a full court press or just being wildly inappropriate.
Oh, I had a very smart 3-year-old, and we were writing down numbers and stuff. And she she happened to be very smart. She wrote down her, maybe 4 years old, she wrote down her mother's phone number and told me, here, my mom said you can have this. And wow. It was legitimately her mother's phone number.
Was the mom a single?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Oh, here's the thing. We hear a lot of chicks who reference a nice pickup that they'll get from a guy. Very rarely do we get to hear it from the guy's perspective. But I got to tell you, Nick, if I'm in your shoes, that's pretty impressive. You got to be a little impressed, yeah?
Yeah, but very uncomfortable.
Right. But was this single Nick or were you already with your lovely lady?
This was single Nick, and this was, to supplement my income as a teacher, I was actually working at a bar in downtown Burlington, Vermont. So not only was I a teacher, you know, at 8 p.m. at night, I would go check IDs at a college bar that sometimes the parents would show up to on a Saturday night.
Did they know you worked there, or they just happened upon it?
Yeah, this was in Vermont, so it was a very small town that it was the only place to go. So I would see them all the time.
And then I bet when they're coming out of that bar at 11 p.m. or I don't know when bars shut down in Vermont, but I would imagine you get a lot of honest comments from moms.
Yes, it flirts with those ethical lines, illegal, but the unethical.
So here's the thing. And you got to tell me, Nick, I'm not trying to get all shock jock on you, Nick. Oh, my God, tell us more. But I'm curious. So tell me if I'm making you feel uncomfortable. But are you okay talking about this?
I'm all good.
All right, good. So was there ever a situation or an instance where a mom, where you had like interacted with her husband even at the school, and then you could tell she's getting a little flirtatious?
Yes. Wow. Yes. Parent-teacher conferences were always – it was always interesting because think about it. When you – Christmas time and the holidays, you always give your you always give your teachers presents.
Yeah.
Right. And parents never knew what to get me because I was a guy. They couldn't get me, you know, and I was very healthy. They couldn't get me chocolate because I wasn't eating chocolate. They couldn't get me a bracelet or an apple because they have this preconceived notion that being a male, I'm masculine. So I'd always get either coffee. But every once in a while, I would just get something very interesting from usually a mother, a single mother, $25 gift, like a gift card to a restaurant with a comment given to me.
Like what kind of a comment? You're being so like, quiet, Nick. I love it.
Like you know, I'm free on Wednesday, you know, Merry Christmas, something like that.
What does your now wife think about this this life that you had then?
She's understanding of where I was in my life. You know that I went to a military academy with University with 92% guys and the 8% women might as well have been females. And I'm not saying that in a mean way, but they were bigger and stronger than I was. So it's like when we were released and we had some time off between training and whatnot, we wreaked havoc upon whatever city we were in. That's kind of like the military's perspective. That's what guys in the military do when they have a little bit of leave. They forget how to interact with women.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about that, but think about guys who get deployed to Afghanistan for a year and a half. They come back and they don't know how to talk to people, never mind go to a bar and interact with a female. So she was very understanding that, you know, the age of 22 to 26 was my growing up phase.
Yeah.
You know, I was just doing the stuff that, you know, people were doing between 18 and 21, 18 and 22. I was just a little delayed with it.
And you never that whole time you're a mid 20s guy single, and at no time did you ever take up any of these single moms, or is it because they were older, the age difference, or was it just you're that focused on your professionalism?
I was focused on my professionalism, and I grew quickly in my career being a male in the early childhood field comparative to, you know, a lot of the people I would tell them was teacher, and they assumed, oh, you a gym teacher? Oh, do you coach football? Do you coach basketball? I'm like, no, I teach kids, you know.
I'm a preschool teacher.
They never understood a male preschool teacher. And it's funny because before, you know, having a child, I probably I probably wipe more asses than anyone could ever imagine by being a teacher.
Well, that's the thing. I want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back, and I want to talk to you now about that transition of being preschool teacher, because we never get to hear it from the dad's perspective. A lot of times when dads are new, they're, you know, we stumble through the diapers. We have no really clue because we don't really play with dolls, and yet you almost had a master class in taking care of small children before you became a father. So let's talk about that right after I tell you about how, speaking of like Nick, maybe you're a single mom. Don't hate on the preschool teacher. Maybe you could find another like-minded single dad. This is a real big jump. Hang on, Nick. at Staying Frosty with the Dad podcast. It's run by our very own Butcher Drew.
All right.
And it is a great place for you to go and use social media to interact with like-minded parents who obviously, if they have a sense of humor, that they enjoy this show and can listen to it. And if they agree with me, they're crazy. But on parenting and stuff like that. But it, like I've said many times before, you've heard me talk about it. Do it now. It's a great way to just interact. I've seen in the chat room, people are catching up and they're making real friends. And it's a very good community of just nice people and parents. And like I've said before, Rachel Gibbs will jump in there from time to time and answer questions. Dr. J, and this is unprovoked me. None of this is managed by me. This was all created by Butcher Drew and made it happen. And now it's just thriving over there. And definitely, I wish you would check it out. Okay, we are back. Still talking to Nick Britton. He's got a book that's coming out later in July of 2017, depending on when you're listening to this. It's Lessons from the Little Ones. If you're listening to this as soon as it comes out, it is available for pre-order now for the Amazon Kindle, and you can definitely go and pick that up. So as we talked about before, Nick, you went from military school, and then you obviously an academic. You've got two bachelor degrees, a master's degree in education. You're working at a preschool. In your opinion, did it make it when your wife comes to you and says, "We're pregnant," or "I'm pregnant"? Did it completely wash away all the nerves because you're like, "I know what to do exactly"?
At first, during the pregnancy, I knew everything. Right, I knew more than her. We didn't have to read any books because I can tell her all that. I was wrong. You know, I'll eat some humble pie right now. I was wrong when you know.
That's great.
It gets real quick.
You said, you know, I was wrong. Go ahead. It gets real quick. I'm sorry.
You know, every father experiences that first time that it's like, damn, like this. I created this life and it's mine.
Is it as simple as you're used to taking care of other people's children and there is a, as weird as it may sound, because like when my son has friends over and they get in the car and if I'm short a car seat, I'll just put obviously the other parent's kid in the car seat and I'll make my older son, because he's expendable, ride without the car seat if we're going somewhere. And so you put a little extra effort into somebody else's kids, but here's the thing is that it weirdly, I can easily wrap my mind around the idea that it is a different consequence when it is your child, because you have, like what you said, this different emotional investment. And so does that just essentially wipe most of your experience out the door? Like it, because you're still just as frantic now and can't think straight?
Yes, pretty much. You know, obviously the changing of the diapers is something that's muscle memory.
Yeah.
That's muscle memory, you know, putting the child to sleep. That's muscle memory as well. Honestly, my biggest fear right now is with all my professional accolades is when my child begins school and interacting and dealing with teachers. Drew, my ego tells me I know more than them because obviously I know more than everyone. That's how I think, right? That's how you think sometimes as well. You know, so that's one of my biggest fears and concerns is what is going to happen when my child gets older and gets to school age, and the teacher might handle a situation differently than I did. And that's probably one of my biggest fears. But, you know, I'm excited for the little things, teaching a kid how to ride a bike, tying his shoes, whatever it might be. That's what I'm most excited about.
Was it hard for your wife? It's like when I have therapists on the show, and especially if they have a spouse, I'm always wildly fascinated about how it is that you fight with someone in a marriage who is a black belt in jujitsu of arguing. And so you, in a sense, come in here as some kind of Zen master of child development. And yet your mom, that wrestles with the nature of natural maternal instincts. So does your wife ever, you like, just look at you and go, listen, douche, shut up. I'm the mother. Let me handle this.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, a lot. I think we all know that she knows best, right? Don't the wives always know best?
Yes, yes. So how do you, are you just that guy who when that happens, it's like you just kind of go, okay? Or is it different? Is that what causes most of the fighting?
You know, I'm still new to this. So that learning curve, I'm still approaching the, it's the argumentative aspect of the relationship where I'm not afraid to speak my mind. But, when we talk about relationships, it's all about compromise. It's all about taking the strengths from both people and putting it together to do what is best for the child. My wife is from Europe. So she's European, so she's coming with a different culture aspect of it that I actually tend to agree with a little more than what you see in more mainstream America.
Can you give me examples? That's interesting. I know I'm putting you on the spot, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're putting me.
It's easy because I know you. Trust me, I don't want you to feel like you're like, oh crap. But it's okay. I get it because when I put the question out to you and I say it's because you're just thinking of an overall tone. But then when I ask you to get specific, that is a gigantic jump. But I mean, I would imagine that's really what I want to know is. What is it that in America that we see as far as what's important developmentally for kids or whatever, that then maybe they have a different priority from a European upbringing? Is it more or less disciplinary, or what is it?
Yes, it's more, I think it's honestly, it's probably more child-based. It's more child-friendly, what the child wants to do, and you run, I don't know if you're familiar with like Maria Montessori, kind of like that concept. Where whatever the child wants to do, the biggest argument the wife and I have is regarding the food situation. Where she's from in Europe, she's never eaten anything out of a box. It's all fresh food and fresh everything. And obviously that's expensive, mm-hmm. right? And I struggle all the time because, you know, my parents, I was allowed to eat cookies. I ate whatever I want, and I think I came out fine. So this fine line, this fine balance over the proper nutrition that I guess I don't know. She probably knows more about nutrition than I do. And I think over in Europe, they're feeding their kids this, you know, organic food and organic this and nothing really out of a jar. They're making fresh food. And it's here. It's like, let's just open up a jar of sweet potatoes and shove it down our kid's face.
Yeah. That's interesting. And I like for anybody who isn't familiar with the Montessori way, and the only reason I know what this is because that's the preschool that both my sons went to, is a Montessori school. And it's funny because I didn't choose it because of the Montessori thing. I chose it because I really, really love the people and their values that run the place and teach there. The women that work there, unfortunately no dudes. I'm sorry, Nick. But they're really great, but and correct me if I'm wrong, because you have a master's in education, but the Montessori way is the kind of the crux behind it is that you let the child decide, like you offer guidance, but that the child is going to develop far faster, especially at a younger age, if the activity or thing that they're doing is something that they want to do, as opposed to saying, this is math time, it is time to do math. And then now you're wrestling with a kid who's not interested in doing math, is that if a kid decides one day, like, I want to do some math, then you just keep giving them math until they're satiated with math, and that they actually develop through that phase faster. Is that a fair way to break it down?
Yes. Yes. Right. Very correct. And, you know, you see right now, the reason America struggles with that is it all comes down to money, to funding. This whole mess with Common Core and whatever it might be, it should be child based. Right. Yeah. This relates back to my book, is understanding that you can learn in any situation. I truly believe that anybody can learn in any situation as long as they have the right mindset. Providing an opportunity for your kid to have a right mindset is essential.
What do you think in your experience in education to me, I think the biggest problem we wrestle with in America in the public education system is that there seems to be a blanket approach that the federal government places on everybody, and then the state governments trickle down from there. And that I think it would be easier to even do the system the same way. Maybe we can't go completely 180 degrees and make it entirely child focused, but it would be easier. And I've talked to other people in education about this. If we centralized it or localized it better, so let a county make all of the decisions about curriculum, and instead of it being on a federal or state level and so regulated at that level.
Of course. And honestly, you know, government's not going to be happy with me, but it all comes down to the money. You know, you think of a child who has special needs, right? A child who has special needs, whether it's the infamous ADD, ADHD, even a speech impediment, social Medicaid and Social Security pays some services for that child. So it automatically gets billed to the federal government. And because of that, the federal government then has control over over everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, and what we would all like for it to be is we would like for the federal government to say, here, we're going to give you this amount of money for this. And that's all it takes. And I, listen, I'm sure I'm a big, gigantic moron when it comes to all of that and what it takes. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, which I don't know if this is something that you speak about or if it's like part of the book you're reading, but it was a topic that was pitched to me, is the idea of time management. Because when I first saw that in the email, I was like, you know what? I think that's really, not only is it huge for families, because I think we all could, you know, pick up a few tidbits on time management. But at the basis of it, I don't even think it's about maybe money. But I could tell you that in my personal experience, that my wife and I fight over her time management. Like, she jokingly calls me the closer because I can get 18 things done in a day. Yet if anything gets thrown out of whack, it's hard for her to pick up two or three things and check them off her to-do list. So what can you tell us about time management? What are some things we could do?
Time management is huge. But most importantly, I tell people all the time, you need to figure out, you know, what your goals and what your purpose are. Why are you managing your time? Is it to make a better life for your child? Is it to pursue your career as a comedian? First, you have to have that first purpose of why you're focused on your time.
And could that focus be as simple as, I'm tired of feeling like I always have something to do and I never get to just have time to sit? Or does it need to be bigger goal, life goal?
No, it can be as little as big as one can be. Time management is essential. This is my life right here, notebooks. I write everything down in an unorganized way. My wife thinks I'm the craziest person in the world because I don't even use the lines on the notebook, but it makes sense to me. Every single day, every hour of my day is mapped out that way. Journals are a great way to do it. Sitting down, we utilize Sundays. Usually when the child is asleep, we plan our week on Sundays collaboratively. We have good, she calls it quality time, good communication, whether it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes of understanding what needs to happen this week, who's going to do what. And then that communication is huge with time management, specifically as a couple.
And so you have a goal, and then how do I deal with the curveballs? Because here's the way I see it, and tell me where you think I'm wrong on this or right, Nick, is that I agree that it's like, well, my goal is just to get shit done. Like, that's my goal. And when I look at it, I like the to-do list, even in my smartphone. I use that to-do list and reminder thing for everything. That's my notepad. Excuse me. And when because I get a little charge, there's a little endorphin rush I think I get every time I check something off and I get it completed. So that's my little bit of incentive. And what happens when I have that list and something goes awry, all I do is get that list and I just move the days around and make sure that I've still got everything covered and I'm getting it done. Is there a way that we could deal with the curveballs when something changes?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. It's like that's what life happens. That's what being a parent is about. You know, being a mother, being a father is about, you know,
yeah, it's a constant, it's an ebb and flow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like it was interesting just to speak to that point, is that hearing you say that I'm still in the throes of kind of working this out and navigating it and all of that stuff. I was sitting here going, because your son is 10 months old, and hearkening back in a non-condescending way, but it's like, you know, I remember those days where just where you feel like you got something figured out is when something in the kid changes or something in your life changes. So I guess maybe a way that we could put this is, why spend time fretting over something that is going to happen? Murphy's Law is going to strike. And so you just roll with the changes and just keep on moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, understanding, just being smart with your time. There's 168 hours in every week. I talk about this all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that equals 168 in a week. Mm-hmm. Every single person in this world has that same amount of time. Whoever you are, whether you're Donald Trump, Barack Obama, Taylor Swift, it doesn't matter. You have the same amount of time. You just need to be smart with how you use that time.
By the way, to me, an awkward lunch with those three. If you're meeting with all three of those people, it's very uncomfortable. Well, Barack Obama, Trump, and Taylor Swift. Anyway, I'm sorry, Dick. Truly, I apologize.
But just understanding that there's 24 hours in a day. One, as a parent, the most important thing in the world. You know, it could be, we can debate all day if it's you as a parent or is it your child. But your most important person in the world is your child and yourself. Take care of that, but be smart with your time. Don't let anyone else control your time. And that's a big thing. I used to get upset over little things.
Yeah.
I used to get upset with driving. I live in Miami. Driving in Miami, it's probably very similar to Los Angeles. If not, LA is probably a lot worse. And I would get frustrated. And I would drive and I would get upset and I'll be honking at people and just wasting my time. And, you know, I discovered your podcast. I discovered other ways to better myself in those down times by learning to grow, learning to just stay calm and being like, listen, this guy who cut me off, I'm not going to let him ruin my attitude or even give him the time or the peace of mind to put me in a bad mood.
That's brilliant. That's the idea of taking these moments, because that's something I don't think anybody talks about in time management, is that, sure, you could say, well, try and multitask, which I think is what you're getting. But I think the bigger point you're getting at here is that the idea of looking at something that is a frustrating part of your life and then just tackling that and finding a way to improve that. Either improve it through efficiency or like what you're talking about too. You're doing it both ways, is that not only are you making yourself more efficient because maybe you're growing in some way or you're learning in some way, but you're taking what could be a negative part of your day and spin your mood, and you're just finding a pleasant distraction that helps you feel like you're accomplishing something and then therefore makes it that much harder for you to get frustrated in traffic.
Exactly.
That's brilliant.
Exactly. And I think that comes down to, you know, I also discuss in my book about how children don't need caffeine, right? They take little power naps throughout the day, but they have energy. They always have energy. They always know what they're doing, but they utilize their time. There used to be a point in my life, you know, one thing I learned from the military is I remember going to bed at 11:30, 12 and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and functioning fairly fine with that. And then something happened along the way in my mid to late 20s where I needed 6-8 hours of sleep just to get through. And I go from one cup of coffee to four cups of coffee and just plugging back into, you know, understanding, truly breaking it down as simple as 24 hours a day. It's okay to as long as you have family time. I don't want people to think they can't have family time. You need to have every single day. But as long as you're in control over time, it's okay to work at 10 p.m. if you need to finish up emails.
Yep. Well, here's what I learned, and I think what you're doing is taking the same philosophy. I mentioned earlier Dave Ramsey. The first thing he tells you in his financial planning is to put together a budget, and so that you spend every penny on purpose, as he says. So you know exactly how much money is coming in and exactly how much money is going out. And what you're saying is just build a budget in the form of a calendar of what it is that you're going to do. And if you have that time scheduled, and when you look at it, just like he says, you can have money to blow on going out to eat for no reason or celebration, and even says blow money, just money you're going to spend on stupid stuff. That's fine. It's your money. So, but you can set aside that time, and that way it makes it easier for you to go, tonight I have to work until 10, but tomorrow I've got 4 hours set aside that's just for my wife, just for my husband, just for my kid or whoever. And that will relieve the stress of you needing to stay there till 10 o'clock that night.
Exactly. And little things too. Say if you have a family vacation, you know, being clear and concise, and whether you have a babysitter or you're a stay at home dad, or you know, roles are reversed, but listen, I have to work late the next 4 days, but in return, my cell phone's going to be off for 2 days straight. And if you get to that point, and it's, my phone's never off, social media, has really quickly become my life. But you get to that point, then you can justify, you know, those long days.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I like about that, too, is that even if you have a day, like a friend of ours has a day that she always knows that she is going to work late, and it's Tuesdays. And what's interesting to me is that if I have that day that I know I'm going to work late, and I'm kind of looking at through my wife's eyes, is that if you get everything done and you get off early, it's a double win. You by mm-hmm. being more efficient and planning with your time, you've actually worked out to where now you have extra time. And what a sweet relief that must be.
Yes, and my biggest thing is the mornings. I love the mornings. I can do so much work. I'm very fortunate with baby sleeping patterns.
Yeah.
But I can do so much. I can do so much work, you know, early in the morning before the sun comes up. I'm like, there's days I wake up and not I wake up, but it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, wow, I really just did like 5 hours of productive work in the past 2 hours of uninterrupted time. All because I woke up a little early.
Yeah, I would like to pitch the idea because it's about to go down in my house because I work morning radio. So I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning now. And then I usually am off by about 10:30, 11-ish, noonish at the latest. And it's great because I feel like I get 2 days because the majority of my workday is spent before the sun comes up. And then I come home. I got a couple hours for the kids to get out of school and I pick them up. And that's the part that I will miss about this if it goes away. But what I will institute, because right now I go to bed about 7 to 8, somewhere in there, I think that a lot of times what my wife and I were making the mistake of is that in order to hang out and have time or just have some time for us is that we would sit there and stay up until 10 or 11. But I'm going to institute our kids' bedtimes is between 7 and 8. I'm going to institute a no later than 9:30 bedtime in my house because I think it will get my wife more rest. She will be able to get up earlier before the kids as opposed to even being woken up by the kids, myself included. And it just, you feel well rested and you get going earlier. And it's easier just to attack the day. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yes, I see so many people just, you see it on social media, like Monday mornings. How many people wake up and they're like, oh, I have to go to work and I hate Mondays and all that BS. And so you get in the mindset where you love the mornings, whether it's Monday morning, Friday morning, it doesn't matter when you're like, okay, I can attack the day. I can cross stuff off my list before the sun comes up. You know, your problems quickly disappear, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so very much, Nick. This has been incredibly helpful. Again, the name of the book is Lessons from the Little Ones, available for pre-order as of now and after July 15th of 2017. You could follow Nick on the Twitter at NJBritton. He's up early, so if you want to chat with him, you can give him a tweet. Is there anything else that I should mention, or anywhere else that people can connect to you?
No, I'm on all social mediums, but I respond to everyone. I try to. That's my goal. I spend a lot of hours, but anyone emails me, messages me, you will get a personal response from me. Obviously, I do value my time, but at the same time, I want to. You know, you were talking about your platform of like-minded parents, right? It's all about like-minded individuals, about people who want to help people. That's my purpose, and I will respond to everyone. You know, and I want to help people. That's my purpose. That's my goal.
And that's what you're doing now, right? Is that you're either be it through books or through these conversations? Do you do any like consulting or life coaching or any of that stuff? Is that part of your entrepreneurial efforts?
Yes, it's a new, I actually just sold a real estate company, which is another story within itself. So I own some real estate and, yes, I do a lot of speaking gigs. The writing is huge, took up a lot of my time. This is actually my second book. I wrote my first book, you know, the same concept a little bit. I changed it around a little bit, put some more personal stories in there. But most importantly, it's all about just connected. That's why it's beautiful that the wavelengths, the radio waves, is like-minded individuals helping people. That's what I'm about. I want to help people just like you do. So reach out to me, connect with me, and you'll get an email back from me.
Is there a website? Because what that makes me think of, like, let's say that I'm somebody who works at a company and they're looking for a keynote speaker for, you know, they do a lot of wellness programs and stuff like that. Is that something that you do, or is yours in a different venue?
No, mine's. I've done everything you can think of. you know, I've done everything, but it all comes back to, you know, parenting. It all comes back to children.
Yeah, it's a great way to connect with people. I can tell you it definitely helped my comedy career. So is there also a website that people can connect with you for speaking and stuff like that? Or is Twitter the best way to reach you?
Twitter is the best bet. I have about four or five different balls in the air, and I don't want to start wasting anyone's time and promoting all these things I'm doing. But reach out to me personally, and that's the best bet.
All right, at NJ Britton. That is two T's in that Britton, Britton. Again, the spelling and a link is in the description of this here episode. Nick, thank you so very much for your time. I appreciate you, man.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I'm back. The thing I wanted to also talk to you guys about this episode is I want to know if this is a primary like caregiver. And by that, I mean whether you're a stay-at-home dad or stay-at-home mom, or if it's a dad-mom thing. What I'm saying is that my kids, when I am home after school, they're totally fine. They just kind of hang out. And sure, if somebody falls or there's fights, but for the most part, it's quiet. Then my wife comes home, and all of a sudden, everybody ages 70 years. And all of the aches and pains come out. There's my back hurts. My knee hurts. Look at this owie I have. And when I say owie, like it's a pinhole thing, you know. And my ear is this, or I don't feel so well like this. And recently this came to a head because Jacob commented when she came home, he waited until I went to bed and he told his mother that he had an earache and that his ear was hurting him, but he didn't want to tell me because, quote, dad doesn't care. I have so many thoughts on this. Okay, so I'm going to try and break this down as much as I can. And that, first of all, I'm fine with moms being the one who babies them. Like, you've heard me talk about it before. I like a balance. I think it takes, you know, somebody should, it doesn't even have to be a male, female. I'm not that sexist. Somebody has to be the one, suck it up, move on. And the other one can be the one to kind of go, oh, it's okay. And that's how you create a balance. It's when you have both of them that are like, suck it up and move on. Although I think both of them would probably be fine, but that's probably because I'm the suck it up and move on guy. But when you have both of them that are like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, there is no suck it up and move on. And then they don't get that. But when they were younger, my wife was the one that if they had any kind of an owie, she would just put a Band-Aid on it. And I would say things like, you can't just put a Band-Aid on it because you're lowering the bar of expectation for a Band-Aid, in my opinion. Now, I know you're probably listening to this going, either you're a fucking asshole, Justin, or you're just crazy. But I believe it. If it's no different than this is so stupid, but it's no different than a participation trophy. If you do not have a cut on your hand and you get a Band-Aid, it diminishes the value or the requirement for a Band-Aid. It now means that if my feelings are hurt, where's the Band-Aid for that? I know it's not that slippery of a slope, but I really kind of think to a certain degree, I'm not too far off that you have to. You have to set some expectation of what is allowable and that there is a cuteness. I read an article about this mom who she's in the news and she's writing this parenting blog. And she was talking about how it's okay for her kids to say Baba and all that, even though all of the experts, this is what I love. She goes, I know all of the experts agree with me, but then she finds one study that says it doesn't really matter. And I'm like, fuck you. Like, come on, like, just talk to your kid like a normal person and understand that if they think, you know, that Boone, this is one of her examples, if Boone is the moon and you never say it's moon, she says, well, when they're young, they don't have the articulators to say the word moon. Well, yeah, but how do they exercise those unless you keep telling them, no, it's moon, and you show them? I don't know. I hate when I get like this because I feel like I'm getting up on a soapbox, but I don't get it. And it struck a nerve with me, and not for the reason I think that may come across. Because when he says dad doesn't care, I don't need my kids to like me. I really don't. I would like it. I'm not going to lie. I think things would be better if they liked me, but at the risk of expectation, at the risk of who I need them to be when they leave this house, if what I have to pay is them not liking me now, that's fine. Because I never really hated my, there was a time in my early teens when I hated my dad, but I always thought he was a, you know, a decent guy. Like even when he was on me, and I mean, he's a guy I've talked about on the show. He called me stupid, called me retarded, like said all these horrible things to me, but I always knew he loved me because he also did a lot of really great things for me. And so when he says dad doesn't care, the only part I don't like about it is that there, just as much as there's an element of me that's like, I would like my kids to like me, but I don't need it to happen. I feel, and maybe I'm putting this on myself, but I feel like there's an element where my wife is like, you see, you don't listen to them, and that's why they need mommy, which I don't disagree with the fact that they need mommy, but it's that they don't need mommy because I'm not listening to them, because to say I'm not listening to them is also false. So he goes a few days of saying he's got an earache, and now we're on day six of an earache. And so my wife loves to throw her PhD in life around, where she says, oh, listen, it's been more than 3 days. He's on the verge of getting an ear infection, and so we got to get him to a doctor. And this always happens, of course, on like a Friday night. You know what I mean? So there's no chance for you to get an appointment to go see a pediatrician. It's got to be urgent care, and you're going to be in there for hours. And the way I see it, maybe it's because of who I am, but I just feel like, so you're going to go sit there for 6 hours for a little bit of peace of mind for them to inevitably tell you, yeah, the kid's got an earache, and give you some antibiotics, sure. Or B, no, the kid's not got an earache. The kid doesn't have a fever. The kid is running. This is the part that pisses me off about it. Kid's running around and playing, completely behaving normally, until mom shows up. And we're all really easy to jump on the idea that I'm being dismissive to the kids, and not, or that they are, I'm so harsh on them that they're afraid to come and tell me when something's wrong. That we don't take into account that I'm also paying attention to their behavior. I could tell when my kid's having a fever. Like, I could tell when he's not feeling himself. And obviously, I don't then tell him to suck it up if he's got a 102 fever. In fact, if he's got a 102 fever and he's, you know, just kind of lethargic and, you know, just hanging out, but not whining or getting overly complaint, like, I tell him, I'm like, good job, because that's also sucking it up. So we're in the car. And Natalie had told him, I guess, well, you need to tell dad that stuff. So we're just driving in the car, all four of us. And then randomly he says, dad, my ear hurts. And I said, OK, what do you want me to do about it? And then he goes, see, mom. And my wife goes, Natalie says, well, I told him that he should tell you, because she'd already told me the story. And I said, I understand that your dad doesn't care. I said, but then explain this to me. How come there, before even this idea of me not caring, how come there were no ailments? How come you can run around and play in the pool and the earache doesn't bother you, but then when mom walks in the door, it bothers you? I don't understand that. I go, and I said, because you assume that I don't care because I don't react. But what you're not understanding is that what I'm really looking at is that it doesn't bother you so much that it doesn't get in the way of you playing video games or practicing your piano, although it can in that. You know what I mean? Where it's like when it's something that teeters on the edge of fun and into work, even for their age, all of a sudden it's too much. It's too hard to handle. And I said, but you know, you're right. Let's continue to operate under the assumption that I don't care, because I don't. That's why I stayed up and went to football practices. That's why I take you to dance class and take you to piano class, because I don't care. It's why I'm involved at the school and come and volunteer whenever I can, because I don't care. I don't care about your well-being. And that part, if I'm being 100% honest, kind of a dick move, but I still stand by it, because I kind of feel like he's being a little bit of a dick. Now, he's got a pass because he's 8. Yes, but there again, where's the bar? Where do we finally put that our foot in the ground and go, no, that's enough is enough? And I get really weird, this whole new thing of me trying to let things go that I'm working on, because that's what my wife says is my problem, and I agree with it, so I'm working on it. But then there is a certain point where that my inability to let things go kind of helps to hold certain people accountable. And I think it's important that they know and learn accountability, because not only, I think we all would agree that it's something that is slipping away as far as a priority, but it's also a really important character trait to be accountable to oneself, to understand that. And he in this regard, even though he is young, yes, but there is no accountability. There's no accountability for the fact that, again, it doesn't hurt when mom's not around. Or he, and I want him to see that connection. I want him to learn that way when he does come to us. Because then there's Jack, on the other hand. Jack comes to us and says, like, my head hurts just because he wants the taste of grape Advil in his mouth. And so now I've told him, I said, well, now because you're lying, because I know when everything's fine, that you're not going to get it. And I go, and one day you're going to really be hurt, and I'm not going to give it to you because I'm going to think you're lying. That's the downside to lying. And again, accountability. Now, I'm sure you're sitting there listening to this going, yes, and maybe even remembering the time that it happened to you where you're like, you're fine, you take him to school, and then you get a call 10 minutes later that they yacked all over five kids and now have become patient zero and are spreading a flu bug throughout the school or a stomach bug. And I'm sure that'll happen. But again, to me, what's the return on it? What's the risk? I was going to say return on investment. Like, what is the chances of that happening are far less than the chances of me overreacting to everything. So this story goes like this, where Jacob then he's saying it still hurts. It's starting to, she says, make an appointment for the doctor. So I said, fine. I make an appointment for the doctor. And then he says, it's really hurting me. So I decide I'm just going to try and look with a flashlight inside his ear. I look in his ear that's hurting him. Or first, before I did that, I just kind of tugged on the side of his ear, not, you know, like in the mid-level on the outer rim. Because, you know, when you get an earache, anytime you move an ear and it wiggles anything inside, it hurts. I said, does it hurt when I do this? He said, no. But when I pushed, like almost to like plug your ear kind of thing, but on the outside, he said, yes, that hurts. And so I opened up his ear just to gently look inside with a flashlight. Right on the inside, that rim, in the most annoying place possible, he has a tiny little pimple, like a little, almost like a, it's not a scratch. It looks like a pimple almost that is kind of dried out. And so I was like, oh, well, that's what hurts. He doesn't have an earache. He has a pimple inside the part of his ear that makes the inside hurt. And then again, I wish I was a better person because I love my wife and I'm well aware I'll kick my coverage, all of that. So kick that disclaimer to the curb. But why is it that I'm the one who doesn't care and yet nobody else bothers to investigate, to even look at the opening of the ear? The person who's supposed to care doesn't even do any due diligence. So within a half hour of me booking an appointment to go to the doctor's office, I realize I don't need to go. It's just a little pimple. So I check. I'm like, it hurts when I do this. And he goes, yeah. I go right here. I get a Q-tip and I touch it. He's like, ow, ow, yes. But if I push down away from the pimple and kind of go inside the ear and wiggle it around, nothing hurts. So it's just that pimple. So I said, you're fine. You got a pimple in your ear. It'll go away in a couple days. And then recently, the little one goes to school, was playing around like kids would. And when I went to pick him up, the director of the preschool, I love his preschool. They're great. She says, hey, Jack hit his hand and it looked a little funny. So just be aware of it, you know. And it's such a sucky time because I'm sure that these poor people have to worry about, you know, people complaining or getting like all frantic about, oh, what happened to my child? Like accidents never happen or kids should never get hurt or experience any kind of frustration or struggle. And God, I sound like such a curmudgeon. I'm sorry. But so he hurts his hand and I take a look at it and it's a little swollen. It's a little swollen. And so it's like, okay, fine. And then we come home and he's fine. He plays video games a good chunk of the afternoon. They go in their room and they're playing around, dancing. Mom comes home. Here comes the finger. It hurts. Next thing I know, mom is taping up his finger like he's Ronnie Lott in the Super Bowl. Like, I go, what do you do? She goes, well, it is a little black and blue, whatever. So I go in and look at it, and it's a little, she said it's purple. It was at the joint area. It wasn't like a bruise. It just looked like it was red and a little purplish, but it wasn't bad. Like, I hate to say the word purple to you because that extends a certain, it had a purple hue to it, but it was not the bruised purple that you're all picturing, okay? And so then he wakes up in the morning, and he says his finger hurts. And she said, it's still a little swollen. And I said, well, he's probably fine. I said, if anything, she says, I think you should take him to urgent care so they can get an X-ray. And I said, well, it's not broken because he's just got, he can move it, but it's not so swollen that it's like twice the size. You can't, it's not really that puffed up. It looks a slightly irritated. So I thought he maybe sprained it or, and I was like, in my mind, I'm like, well, if he's got a hairline fracture in it, there's nothing they're going to do but just stabilize it. So I said, I go, we'll tape it up to his other finger. and make it a little harder to move. I said, he can go to school, and I go, I'll take a look at it when I get home. But I said, as long as it's not more black or more purple, if it, especially if it's red and it's, you know, just a little swollen, it's just healing. That's all that's happening. And I said, at the grocery or the pharmacy, I think they usually make, you can buy like a finger stint almost that you can wrap around stuff. And so she's like, I don't know, it's pretty bad. So she goes to the urgent care. And they do an x-ray. The guy says, there probably could be a hairline fracture, and that if it was, it could be on the growth plate, which would make it harder for him to see in an x-ray, but he believes more than likely it's just a sprain. Now, the reason I tell you all of that is because here's the way I think it goes down. I think the doctor says more than likely it's just a sprain. If it is a fracture, it's a very small one on the growth plate, and so just watch it. You know what I mean? But when you have to retell the story, and this isn't malice. She's not doing it with the intent to, you know, make me feel bad or shit on my point or even necessarily. I don't think she's doing it to support hers, even subconsciously, but it's just the way we communicate. She says he's got a hairline. He could have a hairline fracture on the growth plate, or it's a sprain. You know what I mean? Like, she puts that one as the one that it possibly is. And then, of course, they give him a little finger stint and tape his finger together. It says no playing ball. Can't do the video games because he's using that his fingers too much, and he just has to take it easy for a few days. And if it gets worse, then you come back. If not, then you stay there. Now, to go back to my other point is that I'm saying don't go to the doctor initially, because I just think, and to be fair to my wife, it wasn't like a 4-hour wait in urgent care either time. We got lucky and it was an hour. Maybe this is just an urgent care that nobody goes to. I don't know. But it was a quick in and out thing. So it was an hour, hour and a half, maybe two tops, I think. So it wasn't horrible, but it's just this thing where they go, and then he comes back. He says he found a couple bumps. That's why, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. He did find a couple of red spots in Jacob's ear when they went to urgent care. But he said, he goes, I don't think, he goes, so it could be slightly infected, but it's fine. He gave antibiotics, but only said to use the antibiotics if it gets worse. If it gets better, then just leave it and to stay out of the pool, because the pool water could irritate it. And it might just be some excessive water that he got in his ear that needs to drain out, right? So to me, when I hear that, both of those, I go, see, you didn't need to go. You wasted missing a couple hours at work and screwed up your day, and it would have been fine. But then again, everybody sees it now. Jack has a cast type thing on his finger. Jacob said he heard he had a couple. And when I said, I go, so just so we know, this is what I said, right? Like, are we all on the same page on this, that I said there wasn't an earache? And they go, no, he found two spots. So I don't know. I really would like to hear what you think of this, because I think it's going to be pretty split down the middle. I would imagine that there's you that are like, you got to go just to be safe. And it usually has to do with some kind of perspective thing where something has happened in your past that makes you, as a parent, that makes you go, hey, we got to do this because you could miss this. And I just, fortunately and yet unfortunately, I haven't had that perspective, but I don't know. That was a frustrating thing. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and do some moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with the Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Dad Gear logo on the right-hand side. It's made in the USA.
I have been, I'm going to set this up because I have been really struggling at work and just kind of frustrated. And you know how you get that, those times where you're just kind of frustrated with how either sometimes you're overworking because it's just a busy time of year, or things got busy at your job, and you get a little, you don't know it, but you're a little disconnected from your spouse, or and then also your kids. And so I had a little bit of that. We had a vacation that was coming up. And so since then we've come and gone through that. So this is kind of an older moment of the week, but just felt disconnected. And we were going to go to Universal Studios. And so I thought it would be good because Harry Potter world is a big thing and big reason why we're going, because my nephew, who was way into Harry Potter because it came out when he was a kid, so he's in the sweet spot, and now he's 22, 23. And so it's cool for him to go back. And so, but the kids had never really seen the movies, and if they did, they were so young they wouldn't remember. I think Jacob or Jack was really scared of them, which was weird for them. But anyway, we binged watched the Harry Potter movies. And it was fun because Jack kind of checked out a little bit because maybe he was too young, so he would go and play in his room. But to watch Jacob just get excited by it, and he's constantly singing that song. He's humming it to himself to the point where his little brother's getting annoyed. But it was cool. And while this happened, it gave me kind of an idea. So it's a little bit of a moment of the week and a little bit of a soapbox thing. So I apologize if you hate it when I get this way, but that I realize that what I'm going to do moving forward is I'm going to try to rewire this parental anxiety that I sometimes go through, where you kind of do that check in. I don't know if you do this, where you kind of go, you're trying to go to sleep, but you kind of sit there and go, how are the kids? Are the kids doing good? Are they all right academically? Do they feel loved? Am I raising them to get ready? Or how's my marriage? Is my wife happy? Am I neglecting her in any way or underappreciating her? Like, that kind of thing is what I do from time to time. And every once in a while, I'll get into a little spiral where I worry and I can't go to sleep. And mostly it's about the kids, because the marriage is really solid. And I've decided that whenever I get that way, I'm just going to let it go. And what I'm going to do is, the next time I see my kids, I'm just going to hug them and I'm going to kiss them. I'm going to say, I love you, and say something nice about them, or say something. So the other day I was making dinner and I felt bad because I was, you know, doing podcasts or recording stuff and working a lot. And then they were kind of off on their own most of the day. And I felt like I wasn't hanging out with them. So in the middle of cooking dinner, I had a moment. And so I just took a minute. I came outside. They were watching a show. And I gave them each a kiss on the head. And I said, I love you guys. And they said, I love you too. And the way you do it, but just to make sure that they got the message, I said, I hope you know that you guys, in my opinion, are the best thing I ever did. And I'm so happy and lucky to be your dad and proud of you. And they smiled and they looked at me, and it wasn't like a big gushing moment. You know, it wasn't like they had this revelation, but I don't know. I'm curious to see how this works for both of us, because I think it could help them. And so that was my moment of the week. My moment of the week was getting to do that. And I know I'm going to talk about this next week when we have Darren Carter is going to be on the show next. But one of the other things I want to talk about is, we went to Universal Studios and they got the wands and all that stuff. But the other thing for Jack was, they have this Walking Dead walkthrough, and he swears he loves The Walking Dead. And I know I've said that I've watched the show with them. They've each watched like an episode. Jack is the one who wants to come back for more, but it just hasn't worked out time-wise or something. And he's obsessed with watching it, but I don't want him to watch it right before he goes to bed, because I don't want him to build a negative experience towards it. But this is where I realize you don't have to worry about this stuff. For me, I'm not saying you have to be like me, God forbid, no. But we are at the Universal Studios here in Hollywood, and they have the like a Walking Dead kind of walkthrough. It's like a haunted house that's always there, I guess. And my nephew and niece wanted to go through it, so I was like, sure. And when Jack heard us talking about going through, he's like, I want to go. And so we kind of thought, well, we'll probably just let him slide when we get closer to it. But it's time to happen, and we're going. And he's like, I'm in. And I was like, all right. And so we go. And Jacob was kind of like, hesitant. And then I guess last minute, he decided to go. Everybody went except for Natalie, because she cannot hack this stuff. And Jacob got a little nervous in the line, because it's spooky. You know, there's noises of people screaming and stuff. But I was there. It's not overly traumatic. It could have been a lot worse. I think we've all been to haunted houses that are worse. But he goes through. So we're getting closer. Jacob is kind of like asking questions. You could tell he's more, Jack couldn't be more cooler than a cucumber. Like, he was, and maybe it's his age, I don't know, but he was just chill. He was like, fine, fuck it, who cares? And he had my niece and my nephew. My nephew's like, you know, 6'4", 280 pounds, like just ripped and yoked. So maybe that was a part of it too. But he goes through and there's all this blood and guts, and the guys were reaching out at you, and there were noises. And also there was like we were the kind of a tail end of a group. So like the jumping out parts were all happening like kind of just in front of us to someone else. So we were kind of more watching it as opposed to being jumped out at. But the guys did reach for the kids, and Jacob kind of hid behind me, but nobody panicked. Nobody freaked out. And Jack walked out of there with the biggest smile on his face. And it's here's why I bring it up. I bring it up because, A, if you are like me and you kind of you feel like it's fine, but you sit there and you go, oh, but what if it isn't? This was one of those moments where it validates my choice in that it was totally fine. And now he likes to tell people about how he went through The Walking Dead because he's Jack. He likes to see the reaction. And I'm fine with that because my dad always told me when I became a parent, he said, the thing you want to try to do is get them to do stuff that nobody else in their peer group can do. And that, like, the side effect of that, the consequence of that is self-confidence. And so he gets a little kick out of the fact that he's not going to know any six-year-olds that are going to be walking through The Walking Dead because his 37-year-old mother didn't do it. So that's the show. Again, I want to thank Nick Britton. You can follow him on Twitter at NJBritton. His book that's available for pre-order now, Lessons from the Little Ones. You can get it at Amazon.com. And I think that is it. Send us an email, show@thedadpodcast.com. I'm going to start doing, because I'm leaving, again, please, if you listen to the Bill Handel Show, do not email, do not tweet, we're not there yet, but Friday, depending on when you're listening to this, Friday the 21st should be my last day on the Bill Handel Show. I don't know if they're going to, like, announce it, or they're going to say anything. I don't really care. I don't feel like it should have only been on the show barely 2 years, so I'm not important. They have people that stay there for, like, a decade and all that, and I'm not leaving on any bad terms for any of you that care about it. It's just they removed the comedic element out of the show, and that was kind of what I was there to do. And then so I was more of a board op. That's all I did was turn the mics on and off, and it's just not interested. It's not what I want to do. And I could come here and do this and build this, and have more fun, I guess, to feel more fulfilled. So that's part of the plan. I do have still a part-time job now, so we get to go back and relive that bit, I guess. And I'll be doing production work on Thursday, Friday. So why am I going into all this? I don't remember. It's that I want to start doing Instagram with the Dad Podcast. So I'll set up a feed and I'll be doing, some of you may have checked out the stupid videos I do. I'm always weighing my head about that kind of stuff. Like, I'll make a video and I always sit there and go, who really gives a shit? It's not, I love interacting with the listeners of the show. I really, truly do. It always made me kind of feel bummed when any of you would come and see me do stand-up, and some of you would even come and see me do stand-up but not come up and say hi because you felt like you were being a creep. And it always bummed me out because I like talking to the people, and I would be afraid of being a narcissist. But there's also a part of it where I'm like, when I make those videos, I'm like, this is stupid. People are gonna look at this and go, what the hell are you doing this? But everybody that I talk to says that when you are into a show like this and you see those little things, that you get a little kick out of it. So if you guys get a little kick out of it and it makes you want to say hi or comment or something or whatever, that's fine by me. I really like interacting, is my point. So I'm going to start focusing on that. Hopefully I'll be able to do regular live episodes. I know I haven't been able to do that because the schedule keeps just jumping around, or we have a lot of Skype guests and yada, yada, yada. But all of the social media handles for the show are in the description of the show. Don't forget to bookmark the Amazon link. What else can I tell you? Oh, you got the Facebook page, Staying Frosty with the Dad Podcast, run by our very own Butcher Drew.
All right, all right, all right.
And, oh, the big thing I want to push, I'm going to push this for a while, is it's up on the Facebook page, and I think I did tweet it out. I put it on all my Facebook page. They're going to come on the show, but you might remember Amanda Allen Clark. She was a guest on the show a long time ago. She's an improv and voiceover friend of mine, but she also is an improv, very funny lady. She started doing her own show. It's called Why Mommy Drinks. And they're doing great. They've got some great guests. They're going to blow up. Mom podcasts are getting huge. But, and I'm also, I already reached out to Naptime Radio Ladies, so they're going to be coming on the next month, so I'm not cheating on anybody. But I was a guest on their show. We were supposed to do like a cross record, but of course I got a little loquacious and the episode went long. So you can get a link. I'm the episode on Why Mommy Drinks, and it really, honestly, that's a funny show. That was, not to pat myself on the back, but because it's not just me that's funny. Those ladies are funny, and we're going to hopefully get them on here soon as well. So please check it out, Why Mommy Drinks. It's available on iTunes and anywhere else you could get your very own podcast. And I think now that's it. So, again, on behalf of Nick Britton, this is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.